The Labor Day event from Dell Technologies is here, and it's time to take productivity to another level. End the summer strong by upgrading your growing business to the latest tech. This new season begins with up to 48% off top performance laptops like Bostro, taking performance to the next level with 12th gen Intel Core processors. You'll also save big on monitors, docks, mice, and more must-have accessories. Plus, get free shipping on everything. It's the perfect time to get ahead with powerful tech designed to stay motivated throughout the year and encourage collaboration and innovation among your team. Now, at special prices for a limited time only. Summer might be gone, but it's just the beginning. What's next for you? Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL to save up to 48% on our latest technology.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Here comes Donald, and he spins Burrow around, who then tried to throw it away.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Les Snead, general manager of the Rams. How do you have room under the cap for all the signings that you have, including Donald?
There is ways to be creative.
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, ESPN NBA insider Brian Windhorst. Still to come, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. Plus, actor Mike Coulter. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two, the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We've got Kevin Van Valkenburg of ESPN joining us in a moment to talk about the LIV Golf Tour, where Phil Mickelson was introduced as the latest member of such golf tour yesterday. Today, it appears Patrick Reed and Bryson DeChambeau have now joined this tour, as more named players are running the risk of no longer appearing on the PGA Tour. And basically, they're saying, we'll take this money and play in this this new tour and show up for the majors, which will still allow us to show up. And that's going to be their new careers. And I have no idea what this means for the world of golf right now.
Crazy,
and it's getting bigger and bigger, and the names are getting huger and huger, and the money is getting bigger and bigger. And in many people's minds, the hypocrisy getting larger and larger. And so he's joining us in about 20 minutes' time. Mike Coulter of the show Evil on Paramount Plus will be joining us in a matter of an hour plus as well. You at 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Chris Brockman and Mike Del Tufo in their spots. And so is TJ Jefferson, who later on this hour wants to get something off his chest about our third hour guest from yesterday, Michael Chiklis.
I don't know
why you've got something against such a very talented and sweet man, but...
I got beef with Chiklis.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Well, beef with Chiklis is... by the way, no, you can write that down as our the latest... fantasy team name, but it's also the latest book by Mitch Albom. it's coming soon. It's coming out on Thursdays. Okay. Joining us on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line is our friend from Sports Illustrated. He writes the MMQB every single week. He dropped? What happened? Did he hang up? He's going to go buy that new Mitch Albom book? Is that what it is?
He's breaking some news right now.
I saw that he was on. He was on, then he's off.
He was. Adam was talking. I was in the back when Adam was talking.
And he's gone?
All right, he's calling back.
Like Kaiser Soze?
Adam hung up accidentally on him. It's clear.
Or maybe he's, you know.
Did Rusty Harden pull the plug on it?
Wow.
Look, man, I don't come to work saying I want to go off on a start. No, I don't.
You should.
I don't, man. I don't. Otherwise, I'd spend the next 10 minutes on Jack Del Rio.
Man,
you know,
I wish you would.
I kind of do want to have a conversation with Jack. We could spend the entire show
talking about sports through the prism of what's going on in the real world. And I know people tune into shows like this to maybe escape the real world. And every now and then I kind of bring it in. But, you know, it's just every day with Deshaun Watson, something gets worse.
I know.
You know. And so I don't intend to do it. But it just seems to get worse and worse and worse with what's going on with Deshaun. So that's why we ended that the first hour with that. And again, as I mentioned, Mike Coulter's joining us. And at the top of the next hour, the story that we'll be talking about is what we're going to hit about with Albert when we can get him back on the phone line. The San Francisco 49ers have got Deebo Samuel in camp. DK Metcalf is not there. Aaron Rodgers is, in fact, there in Green Bay. He says he's not going away for quite some time. So there's all of that. You sure you didn't hit a button, Mike, or anything like that sort of thing?
I did not hit a button. I'd admit it. He's calling back.
No, he's calling back. He's calling back.
Okay, here, he's back here in the line.
I put him on the hold.
You put him on the pay no mind list?
No. Okay, never very good. Do that to Albert.
All right.
I like
so Albert Breer is here on the Rich Eisen Show. How you doing, Albert?
Good. I'm good. I'm good, Rich. How you doing?
I'm good. I just thought, like, what happened? You were ready to join us.
I have bad phone right now. I say that's what happened.
Okay, so we're going to cross our fingers that the next 10 minutes on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line goes just fine with you. So let's get right down to it. Is DK Metcalf holding out on the Seahawks, best you can tell?
Yeah, I mean, I think like this is sort of indicative of the way this is going across the league and has gone across the league. And if you notice, Rich, a lot more players are grousing about their contracts in the spring than we used to see, and the reason why is because it's very, very difficult now to stage a holdout in the summer. And so in a lot of cases, if you wait till the end of July, it's too late because the rules in the new CBA are so restrictive and so punitive. I mean, if you don't show up for the first day of training camp, like, you lose the year towards free agency. So if DK Metcalf held a one-day holdout in training camp, then he would not be an unrestricted free agent next year. And so, you know, for a lot of these guys, you know, it's sort of the spring is the time to make your point. And, you know, in a case of a player like DK Metcalf, given what's happened with the receiver market, you know, you can certainly see where maybe, you know, making a $100,000 investment, which is what it would be to miss all 3 days of minicamp, in making a statement about what you want and what you're looking for from the team when, you know, other receivers across the league are getting paid $23, $24, $25 million a year. You can see where that might be worth it. You know, if you're kind of doing the calculus in your head.
So then, why wouldn't Seattle pay him? You know what I mean? I know it's easy for us to say pay the man. You got Deebo Samuel up there in San Francisco. These things take time. I understand, but I'm kind of mystified because with Deebo, it's kind of straight up, right? Where he is such an important part of this team that can win the Super Bowl right now. And that's why a lot of people think Trey Lance shouldn't be the quarterback because he's not, quote unquote, ready for that. But at least you understand that this is a team that's not being retooled, remade. They didn't just trade away their Super Bowl winning franchise quarterback of the last decade, who is a pillar of the franchise. DK could be an indication of where Seattle's going,
right,
with their roster and their plans and long-term plans and things like that. So what is the crux of all of it?
Well, they want to keep him. You know, and look, okay, like, Rich, like, I think if they had wanted to move him, if they had said, like, okay, like, we are really tearing this thing down to the studs and we're going to start over, they would have traded him by now. It doesn't mean that they can't still turn around and decide to do that. In a month or two. But, you know, if that was the plan from the start, the time to do it would have been when teams had their draft picks, when all the cap space across the league was available to extend them if other teams wanted to bring them in and extend them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if the Seahawks plan from the start had been like, let's blow this thing up and start over, and we can't afford to pay a receiver $24, $25 million a year, well, you know, the time to do that would have been in March. And John Schneider, you know, has been doing this for long enough, knows better than you and I, that, you know, like, it wouldn't have been worth it to wait on a number of different fronts. I think this is just a matter of the receiver market changing and, you know, kind of, you know, what the Seahawks probably had budgeted for him, and now those numbers changing. And I think we've seen, you know, at different positions, of course, how things have changed and how thresholds have been broken. You know, you see it at quarterback with, you know, before this offseason, I think there were 3 quarterbacks making over $40 million a year. That number is now 6. And the same sort of things happened at receiver and on multiple different levels too. You know, you've got Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill, you know, you know, at the top of the market. And then you look at, you know, the next level, well, Christian Kirk got $18 million, you know. So there's no excuse not to pay a player like this well over $20 million a year. So, you know, I think part of it's like sort of recalibrating where you're at, you know, and recalibrating for where the market is. And I would assume DK's people and Seattle are going to try to work to get something done before the start of training camp. But, you know, you could definitely see where when you look at the numbers, the amount of money that's going to be that's on the line here, why somebody like DK Metcalf would say it's worth a $100,000 investment to make a statement here, make my point, and let the team know where I stand. So I don't have to do it when it could be really damaging to me in the summer.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. So what is the scoop up in San Francisco with Debo and Lance? I keep saying over and over again,
yeah.
Week one, it's Lance's team. Jimmy G was told, you know, don't even show. You're excused from showing. I mean, and it's not like his presence there would be, you know, so acrimonious if he showed, but there's a reason why they tell him not to show is because it's Lance's gig, right? It's Lance's gig. You tell me otherwise, yeah. And I'll start backing off this thing.
No. It is. And look, like, my understanding is, like, Jimmy Garoppolo's people, like, if there's a trade suitor out there for him, like, I think the green light's there for Jimmy Garoppolo's people to negotiate the financials on it, you know, because obviously with $24.5 million due to him, you know, that could be an issue. So, I mean, everything the Niners have done, both behind the scenes and then publicly over the last 3 or 4 months, has indicated, yeah, like, we're moving on from Jimmy Garoppolo. And, you know, I think that's been signaled to Jimmy in several different ways as well. Now when it comes to the question whether or not Lance is ready, that's a different question, you know. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch where this goes. I would say there was a fair amount of retooling that had to happen mechanically with Lance because he's not the most natural thrower of the football. So the Niners had to work with him on a bunch of different stuff and sort of rebuild some stuff in his game. And as a result, there were some ups and downs last year. It wasn't like a straight ascension, you know? Like, he came in and had a great first 10 days of training camp, then he dipped a little bit. You know, then he kind of slumped, then he came back and bounce back after, you know, he had a really, I would say, mediocre performance in his first start. I think that was in week 5. You know, and so there's been ups and downs, no question about it. But, you know, I think that there's optimism that they can build an offense for him. The question is whether or not it's the Kyle Shanahan offense that we've seen the last few years. And my sense is where they are right now in when we get to week 1, I don't think it's going to be the full Kyle Shanahan offense. I think it's going to be some hybrid offense that's built to get Trey Lance going a little bit. And, you know, that's fine. I think that's sort of kind of where he is developmentally. We knew he was raw coming out of North Dakota State. And, of course, Kyle's been down this road before. I mean, it's sort of what he had to do in Washington for Robert Griffin about a decade ago.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine if Lance gets the throws down? I mean, because you could basically say that, with all due respect, they were running a limited Shanahan offense with Garoppolo too. You know, I mean,
right.
Like there were throws that I'm sure Shanahan would love to have in his offense that Garoppolo couldn't make. And Garoppolo had so many problems throwing over the middle and between the hashes. My goodness, yep. Gracious.
And so he freelanced more than Kyle would like to. I mean, I can tell you that for a fact, you know, like, I mean, Jimmy did a lot of great things, but you know, they definitely, I mean, part of the reason why, they traded up and they, you know, went and got Trey Lance is because they wanted to raise the ceiling at the position. And look, like, you know, Kyle's had quarterbacks that are pretty good, not great before. And he's been beaten on the biggest stage by great quarterbacks. I mean, think about his own experience. And I know that this really has affected their decision making at that position. You know, in the Super Bowl as the offensive coordinator of the Falcons, Kyle coached his ass off for 2.5 quarters, and Tom Brady made it not matter. A few years later, you know, he's the head coach of the Niners. They're in the Super Bowl, and the Niners outplay, outcoach, out everything the Chiefs for 3.5 quarters, and Patrick Mahomes makes it not matter. So, you know, a big piece of this was raising the ceiling at the position. And sometimes to raise the ceiling at the position, you maybe have to take on somebody who has a little ways to go, which is sort of the logic that they used in taking Trey Lance where they did at third overall.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's spend a couple of minutes here on the defending world champs. I had Les Snead on yesterday. So rare to see a contract given to a player that yep. doesn't add any years at all. It just adds money, right? But Aaron Donald's a unicorn, so that makes sense.
check that box. Had Les on here, and he mentioned multiple times the phrase about the window that we have is what he said. And then when I asked him about the specifics on that, he said Matthew Stafford is the key to the window anyway. When you have somebody like Matthew Stafford, you can't put a time frame on a window. But you have receipts that I'm sure Les didn't really want to mention on the air. What do you think that window is for the Rams based on the cap and all of what they've built with the very expensive players worth the money, though? What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, like, they're sort of built the way the Indianapolis Colts were built, if you remember. And there's a reason why, like, those Colts teams with Peyton Manning fell apart the way that they did at the end when Manning got hurt. You know, you had all these guys that they were deeply invested in that they just sort of all hit a wall at once. You know what I mean? Like, so they're built in that fashion. And, you know, I think that there's certainly the potential out there that a bunch of these guys get old at once and, oh my God, what are the Rams going to do? And they have to eat it for a year or two. But I'm with Les on this. It's worth it. You know, if you have one Lombardi already, it's already been worth it. And you probably have a chance to compete with this core for another couple of years. You know, and Stafford's the main piece of it. And he's signed for the next, you know, 4 years. Now he's had his injury issues. So there's no question that, you know, to some degree, you're monitoring that. Maybe he's not a guy that plays into his 40s the way Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady have, but he's the number one piece. You also got to think about the fact that Aaron Donald's 31, Cooper Kupp's getting older, Jalen Ramsey's not going to be young forever. And so what I mean when I'm comparing it to the Colts is, like, when you're, you know, really reliant and over-leveraged with a smaller group of players and you're relying on yourself to – you're relying on your ability to find talent to, you know, kind of fill roles around them. The picture looks a lot different when that core starts to age and decline. And so, like, I think it's not just Matthew. It's a number of different players there that they've really built the team around. And, you know, I mean, one example of it is Andrew Whitworth, you know, like, that's already taking a big piece out of the puzzle. So, yeah, I mean, that exists, no question about it. But, you know, I think everybody in that building would tell you, that party they were able to throw in February made it all worth it. And anything they get from here as far as the plan goes is icing on the cake.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's jump into Deshaun Watson. What's going on in that Browns building right now? I mean, they have to be shaken by the 24th lawsuit that led to Watson's own attorney saying, we got to look into this, as opposed to, like, never could have happened in a million years with a behavior like that sort of thing. Jenny Vrentis's story, I mentioned earlier that the behavior that is laid out there can be termed as predatory. There's just no other way to put it when you read that sort of thing. He has every right to defend himself in this country, and there's a court of public opinion. He is losing in that court right now, getting routed. And he's got to show up for work next week. What is happening, Albert, right now?
So I think I'm going to give you one of the keys, and I don't have the answer to this question.
Okay.
How transparent has Deshaun Watson been with the Browns? How transparent has Deshaun Watson been with the NFL? That's, I think, an operative question here. I think it's a really, really important question. And we've seen the NFL come down harder on players in the past that weren't transparent with them. And they've always felt like they have to do that in large part because they don't have subpoena power, right? So they have to sort of set the example that if you don't cooperate with us, it's going to be worse on you. It helps them investigate future cases. So, you know, like, looking forward at this, and we all, I mean, look, the accusations are awful, and I think that goes without saying, and I don't want to trivialize any of that, but just, you know, talking about this from a functional standpoint, what was in Jenny's report in the Times yesterday, and then what was in the 24th lawsuit, like, how transparent was Deshaun Watson with the Browns, with the NFL, about what was coming? Because I think that could affect where this goes. I don't think we're going to get word on a punishment, like, tomorrow. I know the NFL's feeling was maybe the best course of action was to wait until the period for pretrial discovery ends, and that ends on June 30th. So, like, their feeling was it's important to let any information that's going to come out before we make a final decision. And it doesn't really matter whether or not we make a decision before June 30th. It won't materially affect anything anyway. But I mean, I don't know, Rich. Do you think that maybe the league feels the heat now? Do they have to do something? I think the feeling with the people in the Browns in the league up until now has been that they were going to get a decision on discipline right before training camp. But you know, like the public pressure that's on the league and the Browns now, and then you know, I think however transparent Deshaun Watson was with the Browns and with the league could certainly affect, you know, the timeline and how this goes over the next few weeks.
I mean, is he not available for questioning next week, you don't think? I mean, it's mandatory minicamp. Every quarterback speaks. We've got Aaron Rodgers in front right. of his locker that we're going to be playing on. I mean, that's part and parcel. When you are the starting quarterback and certainly one of the most well-paid quarterbacks in the history of the league, I mean, honestly, like, and you could keep saying, you know, you're going to respect the process. The Texans also in this story popped up a couple of times. Yeah. What, like that now opens up a completely different avenue of questioning right now, Albert. I know you don't have the answers, and I know the league doesn't appear to have them either, that they want more answers before acting. But isn't that what the commissioner's exempt list is there for? That we play someone aside, they're still paid, and we're just going to, you know, we're going to remove this player from the public forum and the ability to ply a craft while we figure out what's what, right?
And Rich, they've used the commissioner's exempt list in that way in the past. I mean, they used it, I believe, in 2000, was it 14 with Rice and Hardy and Peterson, right?
Yeah.
Like, they used it. And, you know, like, there was a shift in the way that they've handled discipline the last few years. And that was, you know, really a result of the Ezekiel Elliott case and Jerry Jones basically convincing other owners, like, we don't want to be judge, jury, and executioner anymore. We should let the legal process sort of lead us by the hand. And so, you know, as a result of that, like, you know, the league's stance on this has been, well, so long as there aren't criminal charges, we aren't putting him on the exempt list. And I would say this, too. I think the Texans really sort of bailed the league out last year in that sense, right?
Right.
Like, because the Texans just said, okay, we're not going to put him on the field. And Deshaun Watson was okay with going on paid leave or in effect paid leave. It wasn't paid leave, but it was in effect paid leave. And so, you know, both Watson and the Texans sort of bailed the league out.
But that was also at a time where we didn't know the details of what was going on. We just assumed it's because Watson insisted he would never play for them again, and why would they have that player out there on the field and run the risk of him getting hurt?
Yeah.
That was the backdrop of what we thought at the time was all of that.
Rich, at the doorstep of training camp, you'll remember last year there was that question, is the league going to put him on the exempt list? And the narrative coming out of 345 Park was pretty consistently, unless there are criminal charges, we won't do that. And then the commissioner actually came out and flat out said that in March. And so what I know about the commissioner's exempt list is Roger has great a high level of discretion on this, right? Like, so like the narrative about the criminal charges, that's not really required. Like, he can put Deshaun Watson on the commissioner's exempt list as he sees fit. And I'm with you. Like, if they don't feel ready to suspend him, like, I sort of feel like this is what the commissioner's exempt list is there for, at least in the form that they've started to use it, really going back to that, you know, September with when the Ray Rice and Greg Hardy and Adrian Peterson cases happened all at once. It's, you know, to take a guy off the field when it reflects poorly on the league what's going on. And so, I mean, yeah, I think next week's going to be interesting. Whether or not the Browns put Deshaun Watson out there is going to be interesting, you know, in front of the media. And at this point, you know, like after, you know, not making him available for the entire offseason and sort of making Kevin Stefanski answer all the questions for everybody on this, I think it's very fair to question the Browns if they don't put Deshaun Watson out there. And I don't remember what the PFWA rules are about that, but I don't think they have to make him available. But, you know, I think the optics are really horrible if they're hiding Deshaun Watson. Even if all they can do is put him out there and he just has to answer every question, I can't answer that because of the legal situation going on. You know, I think the optics of not putting him out there and having him, you know, face the music are not good for the organization.
Albert, thanks for the time. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, Rich. I appreciate it. I apologize for the phone.
It's all good. That's Albert Breer here. I know we got to take Albert. We got to take a break to get ready for Kevin Van Valkenburg. But just real quick, Stefanski, they put him out there. I mean, what's the coach going to say? It's the owners who said we're comfortable having him on the team that should be speaking.
Correct.
Right? I mean, what's Stefanski going to say? That's what he keeps saying. I'm going to respect the process. The only question is, what was the process above the flow chart from you that was going on? You know? Stefanski's just hired to come up with the schemes and win and lose. More, you know, win. I shouldn't say win and lose. Win.
Win or tie.
We'll take a break. Kevin Van Valkenburg next, talking about the LIV Tour, everybody, when we come back. Does your antiperspirant keep you dry all day? Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray goes on instantly dry for a cleaner feel and offers 48 hours sweat and odor protection. Let me repeat that. 48 hours of sweat and odor protection. Use it and don't even think about it. Also, Dove Men Dry Spray contains Dove's unique one-quarter moisturizing cream that helps protect your skin. Try Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray. Goes on dry. Clean feel all day. The Rich Eisen Show here on Terrestrial Radio Audience. Kevin Van Valkenburg of ESPN joining us here on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. Kevin, you mentioned $200 million fee for Phil, and you also said for Dustin Johnson. I mean, is this equity firm that is funded by the Saudis giving out a quarter of a $1 billion almost to every single player that says yes to playing on this tour? Is that what's happening?
Not every single player is getting that, certainly. Some of the big names, the big fish, in particular, you know, Phil was kind of one of their big targets, because not only was he willing to come do it, but he was, you know, willing to sort of recruit other players and try to set up the model for how the league could be run. And so, you know, no one knows exactly like how many millions some people are getting, but you know, you hear, you know, 30 million for guys who have one PGA Tour win who are young, and you know, $1 million here for guys who were a few years ago the U.S. amateur champion or the NCAA champion. And so it's a mixture of kind of old and young. And you know, I think the complicated thing is that the Saudis have decided that it's in their best interest to kind of show the world that they're a country that can be invested in and taken seriously, and that they want businesses in particular to sort of look at stuff like their investments in Formula One, their investments in this tour, their purchase of Premier League teams, and say, you know what, I think I'm comfortable investing in Saudi Arabia. The public backlash isn't that significant. We don't have to always talk about Jamal Khashoggi and some of the executions that they've carried out on LGBTQ people. So I think that it's not really a tour. You have to think of this, Rich, like none of this is intended to ever make back this money. They're not giving Dustin Johnson or Phil Mickelson this money because they think we'll turn a profit in a few years on the golf. They're fully comfortable, it seems like, losing all that money because the sort of larger goals are they want to build cities in Saudi Arabia. They want European and Asian and American money to feel comfortable coming into their country. And, you know, it's a complicated moral issue, but I think that their bet is looking like it could sort of be the right one because they have a lot of money to throw around. And for every time that people talk about, hey, that wasn't that neat when Bryson won that tournament in Portland or Bedminster or Jeddah or, you know, wherever they end up playing, Trump Doral, that was a great opportunity for them to sort of launder their reputation a little bit after some kind of pretty controversial thing.
Kevin Van Valkenburg of ESPN right here on the Rich Eisen Show. So when this kimono gets lifted in the manner in which you've described in a question and answer period with these players in these introductory press conferences, what are their responses to it?
Well, it's clear that they've all been coached to sort of sell this as, no, this isn't about the money. This is about growing the game and reinventing golf. And, you know, we want to bring a younger crowd to golf. And you know, it just doesn't really feel like any of them believe any of that deep in their hearts. Like, they wouldn't be here if it was sort of just about growing the game of golf. And in some ways, like, you almost wish they could just say, like, you know what? It's a lot of money, and I decided to take it because I want to make a lot of money and I want to work a lot less. And I don't really care about the implications to the PGA Tour, which is set up as a nonprofit. I don't care what that means for the future of those other people who stay. I want to make a lot of money. And, you know, it's kind of funny to sit there and hear guys talk about, yeah, the reason that I'm coming to play this tour is because it has a shotgun start, not, you know, because I'm getting $100 million. I really like the idea of a shotgun start so that everyone has a fair draw. And if he's almost kind of chuckle sitting there because some of them trying to sell it with a straight face, some of them are better at selling it than others. And, you know, in that respect, nobody's ever been better at selling products than Phil Mickelson since Arnold Palmer, really.
So what is happening in the front offices of the PGA Tour right now, Kevin?
I think that there's a little bit of a panic probably going on. There's certainly some, you know, worry that they're going to lose more people. I think you have to understand, Rich, like, the PGA Tour benefited a long, long time from being set up as a nonprofit. It essentially allowed them to pay, like, to duck out on essentially $200 million in taxes. ESPN, Paul Levine did a story about this. You know, it's almost 10 years ago, so it probably would work out to be like $300-400 million now. But that setting up as a nonprofit means that they cannot, like, give money directly to the players just for sort of showing up. And it has sort of, like, come home to roost, and then it hamstrings them a little bit because a lot of athletes in every single sport, they want guaranteed money. And who can blame them? Like, injury or performance, like, if you play poorly one year in golf, you know, you're not going to get paid a lot of money. And so the PGA Tour just simply cannot, by legal rules, hand over money to people. They have to sort of invent reasons like, oh, this is for the, you know, the player performance thing. It's what drives fan interest, what's referred to as the PIP. So they gave Phil $8 million last year for driving fan interest, and Tiger $10 million for, you know, being one of the most Googled recognizable athletes, even though he didn't hit a single shot on the PGA Tour. All of those things still pale in comparison to the $200 million that, you know, the public investment fund that LIV Golf people can give someone like Phil or Dustin or Bryson. And so I don't really know exactly what the answer is going to be for the PGA Tour. They can't, I think, forever rely on sort of the loyalty or the morality of people like Justin Thomas or Rory McIlroy, who both come out strongly against joining LIV, because that's not going to last forever. Like, money sort of always talks in every professional sport, and oil money dominates the world. And I think that what we're seeing is that it makes sense that it would eventually kind of come for sports. Like, people were kind of aghast when it came for Premier League Soccer and F1, and now it's coming for golf.
Well, I mean, the concept of the tour card, Kevin, Dustin Johnson flat out said, I'm resigning, I'm out. Phil said, why would I give it up? I spent so much time in my entire career to get what I got. I'm not giving it up. I'll play in the majors. And then there's the issue of whether he's serving out a PGA Tour suspension. He demurred on that, saying, I'm not talking about tour issues, and then directly responded to a question about whether he's given up his card or not. So what is the tour potentially going to just play this out, hope that there are some young stars that everybody's going to want to see to supplement the guys who they're not going to allow to come on? Will they eventually allow them to play in some of these events if they're past winners, top 10 winners? I mean, like, what wiggle room might they have here, do you think?
Yeah, it's a really tough question, in part because, like, if you're Dustin Johnson, let's say Dustin Johnson hadn't resigned his PGA Tour card, mm-hmm, and he wanted to play in the Valspar or the Arnold Palmer or some tournament. If you're the tournament committee chairman of the Valspar or the Arnold Palmer, and Dustin Johnson wants to play in your tournament, how do you sort of be okay with the PGA Tour saying no? Like, that, we know that might help your gate, it might help your sort of, you know, the amount of money that you can donate to charity, but we're going to hold firm on this, and he's not going to, you know, be allowed to go. It's going to be a tough position for them. I mean, I think they have to kind of stand with what they sort of said their punishments were going to be, because they've made a big talk and several times spoke to all the players and said, if you do this, you'll be subject to discipline. You're going to be suspended. And I think it would be kind of ridiculous to think that Phil hasn't been suspended on some level. Like, why would you not say, like, oh yeah, no, I haven't been suspended. I haven't had that conversation. But like, it's pretty clear that trying to set up a rival tour and giving them documents, allowing your lawyers to draft some of that legal language is kind of grounds for suspension, even as an independent contractor of a particular tour. So I think that there's a very good chance that this becomes a legal issue, that it goes to court, that we have a court case that could go to district court and Supreme Court of Mickelson versus the PGA Tour. Mm. And I think in part, Phil probably would not mind that kind of fight. He doesn't, I think, like, have outright animosity towards the PGA Tour. He feels on some level like it has allowed him to live a pretty amazing life, and that he's also kind of quick to sort of say, I've given a lot to the tour. I've kind of helped given a lot of value over the years. And he's right. Like, nobody besides him, besides Tiger, has won almost 50, I think he's run 47 times. That's an amazing number for a professional golfer. And I think that we are going to sort of, if he says, you know, basically, hey, I'm going to fight this, I'm not going to be like Dustin Johnson and just say, I'm good with it. I want my place back on tour. I earned that. It's going to get interesting. And it'll get interesting because I think we've seen in a lot of, you know, court cases that, you know, there are legal issues, sure, but like, it often kind of can come down to what political appointees are sort of certain judges, right? Like, there's a lot of politics that are messing with this. Like, Jared Kushner is a close friend of the people who are running this tour. Ari Fleischer is out there working as the MC of this these press conferences. Like, there's a lot of, you know, politics swimming about in this. And so if you've got political appointee judges who don't love the PGA Tour because, you know, they've been sort of steered down that road by certain people, then that's going to get really interesting and complicated, isn't it?
Well, I mean, Kevin Van Valkenburg here on the Rich Eisen Show, you just mentioned how there's politics involved in this LIV Tour and who's behind it and who's friendly with it. I mean, is Newsmax now going to get into the sports rights holder front? And I say that with a little bit of tongue firmly planted in cheek, but it is, look, anybody who tells a story about how the merger happened in the NFL and the AFL was television contracts. And if TV starts showing it and people start watching it, then that gives that upstart league, if you will, a little bit more power and a little bit more buzz around it. And so, like, if the PGA Tour events have fewer stars on it, will the television partners of the PGA Tour start to look around and ring up the number of the LIV Tour and see what's going on? Like, what is the TV? Last one for you is what's the TV aspect of it? Because right now the only way you can see this is online, and that's not a problem. That's how people are watching the show right now. But what do you think, Kevin?
Well, certainly a TV contract somewhere would help us further establish the tour and would make it sort of available to a golf interested audience that isn't quite embracing streaming like, you know, a younger generation is. So the medium age of golf fans is probably 55 and up. But, you know, I think we're also kind of have to sort of grasp that if they got some sort of streaming distribution where they were getting money for it and, you know, that was where broadcast rights were trending. And I think if you look at like the NFL being broadcast on Amazon and Apple and places like that, that there is evidence that other sports are trending towards specifically just streaming, that maybe golf could sort of survive. And maybe that would be, you know, just a different way to look about it. I know that they've tried to get some sort of, you know, broadcast partnership, and they've essentially been kind of turned down or chuckled at. But for every sort of larger star that kind of drifts over there, it makes it a little bit more appealing, right? And how did Fox TV, how Fox Sports become a huge
NFL,
you know, NFL. They get the NFL in whatever, you know, year that was, 1990s, and now, you know, it's a huge media empire. And so, like, what if a smaller place decided to take a shot and say, hey, golf is my kind of thing, and that's what we're going to sort of stake our flag in, and you know, who knows how it's going to look like in 10 years.
Kevin, thanks for the time. Are you going to the event this weekend? You can do it?
Yeah. I don't think I'll be writing about any of the golf stuff, but I'll be sort of writing about the scene and trying to kind of make sense of it all. And there's apparently like kind of rock concerts every night after the golf. It's really unclear to me whether any of this is youthful or it's like kind of out of touch old people trying to feel youthful. So I'm going to kind of dig into that and see what I think, if they have actual fans here or people who've been paid to sort of dance with DJ Fat Tony, who apparently is one of the people who's appearing.
Oh, I was going to say, is it Kid Rock? Is like John Voight the course reporter? I mean, like, you know, what do we got? You know, like what do we got? Do we know?
Kid Rock did appear. He did perform at Dustin Johnson's wedding. So I feel like he's obviously in the Rolodex.
See, you know what? And everybody thought I was just trying to be funny. Oh, my gosh. Thanks for the call, Kevin. Appreciate it. We'll chat soon.
You bet.
And it's Kevin Van Valkenburg, everybody. All right, let's take a break. We will be back with more. There's the famed new Mitch album book, Beef with Chiklis, as based on a true story of T.J. Jefferson with yesterday's third hour guest. That's coming up next. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Hey, Chris, you went to the Angels Red Sox game.
I did. Great game last night.
You showed up and Trout homered. Boom. How about that? And then
and then
the Angels still lose anyway. They fired Joe Maddon.
And extras.
I mean, just 2 weeks ago, the Angels were on their way to the playoffs, and Joe Maddon had solved that Angels Rubik's Cube and might have been as simple as, hey, Trout and Ohtani are healthy. And then a 12-game losing streak happens, in the middle of which we learned that Trout is the worst fantasy football commissioner of all time. And Maddon gets fired. Phil Nevin is now the interim manager there.
Yep.
Trout homers first inning. Nothing really.
Ohtani double off the wall, and then Trout homer. Kike just missed it, robbing it.
Right.
And then from there, it was back and forth. A lot of action, a lot of hits. Sox won an extra.
Did you stay all the way?
Did.
Wow. Very impressive.
Good stay. Thank you.
Very impressive.
I mean, a rare night out. So
yeah, again, very good. Very good.
The most of it.
While that happened, the Yankees won handily. despite the 6-game win streak for the Red Sox, they're still 11 and a half games behind.
Can't
the Yankees have won
ground.
7 in a row. And it's now, what's the date? I mean, you're like the cuckoo clock on this program with a calendar. What are we? June 8th.
Yesterday it was June 7th, so it's not miraculously August. You know what I mean?
Okay, it's so only it's June 8th. It's later. June 8th. Got it. Understand. Yesterday, Michael Chiklis, Red Sox fan, was here, brought this all up to him. And he thought I was writing checks that I couldn't cash. And I said that there's a canyon and there's heroes. And then he brought up, what did he bring up, T.J. Jefferson? What did he say in response to that?
Well,
what did he say in response to that?
And he said it kind of very slyly and didn't like put a lot of emphasis on it. He goes, you just never know what might happen. He goes, you never know. A pitch might come in and hit Aaron Judge in the pinky.
That's what he said. Something like that. Yeah. It should be his point of like, there's anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
But as a Red Sox fan, you know he was just giving you a scenario, but he was really wishing it.
I don't think there's any malice in that man's heart. No, when it comes to sports, he turns into the Thing. You know what I mean? From back in his film.
Ben Grimm was a Yankees fan.
You know. So then what's your problem with that?
Oh, why I got beef with Chiklis?
Yeah, what's your problem with him?
Because, man, he put that out there yesterday. He kind of put the...
About Judge.
What he did was...
Judge homered in his first at-bat,
he put the voodoo out there.
Yeah, it couldn't have been robbed. It went
over.
It disappeared into the ivy that they have there in Target Field.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was way gone, off the bat. Sorry, I digress. Go ahead.
Well, you know, he put it out there. You know, he wanted to put a little hex on the Yankees, and he said, you never know. Aaron Judge might get hit with a pitch. So what he did was he put the hex on a New York power hitter, and it missed Judge, and it went right to Pete Alonso in the form of a Yu Darvish fastball that hits Pete on the hand, and he has to leave the game. I think it was like the first or the third inning. Like,
you're blaming him
I'm
now.
Blaming Chiklis
Come
for
on,
that, man.
Are you serious?
If he wouldn't have said that, do you think Pete would have got hit? I don't think so.
So how is Alonso now? Is he okay?
He's okay. Nothing broken.
Oh, okay. So what are you
complaining about?
Because I had a night of sleeplessness, okay? I was scared. I was nervous because then Sterling Marte goes out with a bad will, and I'm like, oh, it started. It's now coming.
Now coming. Yeah, it's happening. It's a long season.
On June the 7th, it's starting. But guess what?
It's a long season. Anything can happen.
Now it's a long season.
Judge hit his 22nd home run last night. That leads the majors.
And guess what? Marte's fine. Alonso's fine.
So you're fine.
It hasn't started yet.
It's okay. You're just a Met fan looking for the trap door. I'm a Yankee fan who's just ready for Canyon of Heroes. That's the difference between a Met fan and a Yankee fan,
the
right there.
Is a third
right
of the way
there.
Over.
See, now
right
you're being cocky now, and I might
I'm not being
happy.
Cocky right
that
now.
That was
though.
A very
Yankees,
arrogant
the Yankees,
statement.
The Yankees
that
was are
extremely
excuse
arrogant.
Me. No, I'm not being cocky. I'm just dispensing facts. The Yankees are 40-15.
Yeah, the Mets are 30.
The Yankees are 40. The Yankees are 40-15. Last time they won 40 out of their first 55, they won the World Series and finishing 125-50. That was the last time that happened. 1998. Mike, don't hide your hands. Love it.
I saw that team win.
Soak it in.
I don't want to
love
talk
it.
About
soak
it, now.
It in. Love it. Soak it in.
I'm not soaking it in.
Love it.
Until 28 is in the hands, I'm not soaking it in.
40-15 is what they are right now. You are what you are, and what they are right now is on June 8th. That's all I'm saying.
We're 38-20.
It's so early. It's early. Of course it's early. Anything can happen. I totally understand that. And you're sitting there saying, oh, God, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I'm saying, yeah, it's happening. Difference between you and me.
Again,
Mets and Yankees. That's it. And you're
arrogant.
saying that's not arrogant. It's called.
It's arrogant.
No, it's hashtag spitting facts.
It's arrogant.
It's cocky.
And it's
but here's
back.
The deal. It's like you're
his
not
team,
cocky.
His team is like, hey, we're on the upswing. We've won six in a row. We're finally two games above 500. two above average. Two.
The Sox were 10-19.
I know. Yeah, I'm so glad you joined the Major League Baseball
the
season.
Mets
these
were
are all facts.
The Mets were never that bad this year, so I can't relate to that.
Out in a loss.
Terrible.
They've won six in a row. They're still 12 out in a loss. It's amazing. It's wonderful. Soak it in, Mike. Enjoy it.
I can't.
I am.
We're in the wild card. What are you guys talking about?
Mike Coulter joining us in hour three in studio.
Like, season ends today. We're in the playoffs. Like,
great. It'll
cares?
Be great. Who are you starting? By the way, Simmons had a great tweet last night. He is right because I have Garrett Whitlock. Whitlock in fantasy. Why are the Red Sox trying to turn him into a starter? He could be the guy that comes in every other day.
Don't know.
And shows up in innings 7 and 8 and just locks down whatever lead your pitcher's handed.
6, 7, 8.
Right, he could do that.
Oh, but they don't have a closer.
Let him close. Let him come in 8 and 9.
I don't know. Yeah.
Then let him be that guy.
I don't have an answer.
Why are they
I'm
doing
not the
that?
Manager. I don't know. But like Simmons said, hey, at least we locked up Rafi Devers and Bogarts.
That hasn't happened.
Oh, wait a second.
I know. I know.
Great.
Hey, enjoy tonight. You're in the finals tonight. It's great.
Not going tonight. Made a decision.
Yeah.
Got to watch the NBA Finals
the games,
tonight.
The game's three
gotta
time
watch.
Zones away. The game's on the East Coast, by the way, TJ.
Got to watch the NBA Finals tonight. Going tomorrow. Pavetta tomorrow.
Oh.
That's who we start.
Oh, so
playoff.
Going tonight. I thought you said you're not going to the NBA Finals tonight. So
no, no, no. Oh, okay. Staying home, watching the Finals tonight, right. Going back to Anaheim tomorrow.
For Pavetta, who I also have. Coop picked
Me
him
too.
Up the
He's
other
amazing.
Day. He's been great lately.
Yeah. Great name.
On fire the last month.
Coop picked him out the other day for our team. Which has won seven of the first eight fantasy contests this year.
For all the crap
you know what,
we're like
the Yankees. It's still early. Anything can happen. But you know what? We're winning more than not. Stop it, Mike. Enjoy it.
I can't.
Why?
Virtually every other team in baseball is
like, hey, we won six in a row. We're two games above 500. This is great. Hey, I mean, we're looking good the last 10 days. How about the last 8 weeks?
2004.
First eight weeks. This
done.
Is great. Thank God the lockout
I can't
ended.
Do it.
Because could you imagine if this didn't happen because of the lockout?
I love it, but I can't even think about it.
Judge on a pace for 65 home
it's
runs.
Great. Yeah. It's great. May he
They're
be.
They're showing him stats against
I love
Yankees.
How you blame Pete Alonso getting hit on Chiklis saying anything can happen, and he used that thing. He just threw it out there about Judge getting hit with a pitch.
Yankees are going to have to print money.
Because he put it
Judge.
Out there, is all I'm saying.
You know what, Judge, any pitch that comes close to Judge to hit, that would hit him, he'll just turn on it and gone. He'll turn it on and put it over the fence.
Okay, not like Alonso don't have 14. Like,
oh, Alonso leads the league and runs batted in. Mets look great, dude.
I know.
You should be like me.
Nah, I can't.
You should be cutting up
TJ,
paper.
You see, I swear, I'm like TJ.
You should be cutting up paper to throw
the
out the window
TJ,
in downtown Manhattan.
Watch them win, too.
You know, I'm just going to enjoy it game by game, every game on June the 8th.
That's our update on baseball.
June the 8th.
Hour 3 coming up.
for the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments. It's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
All-time Hogan opponents. Macho Man's got to be in the conversation. Where's Andre for you?
I've always said Andre was number one.
Wow.
Because even going back before, you know, Hulk Hogan was a babyface, Hulk and Andre were able to go in and headline at the New Orleans Superdome, at Shea Stadium in Japan. Wherever they went, that was an attraction.
Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.